You're listening to the From the Hack Curling Podcast, part of the Curling News and Sports Illustrated Partnership. Hi, everyone. My name is Frank Rock, and welcome to the From the Hack Curling Podcast. Today, we are joined by two men who played pivotal roles at the most recent Brier in Regina. One of my guests put the team of a province he does not even live in on his back and led them to the championship final. My other guest has played second for the two Brads, winning Briers with each of them. Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining me this week. Once again, my name is Frank Rock. My first guest this week is Mike McEwen, who, representing his third province in as many years as the Brier, showed glimpses of the magic Mike shot-making is famous for while leading the home team from Saskatchewan to within one game of winning the province's first Brier since 1980. Mike, you and I are chatting a few days following the 2024 Brier. I want to take you back to something you said when I spoke to you before the Brier. Throughout that whole interview, there was a sense that you truly believed that your team was positioned to make a run at the Brier in Regina. What about the lead-up to the Brier gave you a sense that you were about to make some noise, you know, the type of run you went on reaching the championship final?
I think it was how we played in provincials. Just collectively as a team, I thought it hit another level, especially by the end of the Tankard. And I just, I personally was also feeling extremely confident after the Tankard. I thought if I could play kind of at that level, that we would, that we would be in the final four. I had no doubt about that. I had a feeling we were going to be playing in the final even before the opening night of the Brier. I can't, you know, say that there was one definitive thing, but I had that feeling, and I knew that us as a foursome were starting to play our best curling.
It must have been comforting going into an event as big as a Brier in that kind of headspace, Mike. Did it help you relax a little bit as you worked your way through what is typically a pretty difficult week?
Nope. I think the opposite.
Oh, yeah?
I didn't find it comforting in maybe the way that you're mentioning.
Okay.
I found it, you know, I don't think I've ever played a Brier with this kind of belief in not just myself, but the whole team. But it was the knowledge that it was going to take everything. And I felt like I truly, truly actually had everything to give. And I found it, you know, especially after opening weekend, you know, I looked at myself Monday morning when I woke up and I'm like, oh, now I got to do this for seven more days. And yeah. I did find it quite taxing. I definitely had the belief that we were going to be there right at the end. But I just wouldn't call it comforting.
The grind was real. Even though you went into the event and you were feeling good. Once you got into the meat of the week, especially starting on, especially after that first weekend, the grind was real.
Yeah, and absolutely. And I just, when I looked at it, I was like, oh, I have to do this for seven more days. I don't know if I can do that. And then I just, okay, well, whatever. Who do we got tonight? I'm just going to do it again tonight. You know, empty the tank tonight. Okay, that's done. Who's tomorrow morning? Empty the tank again. And just, you know, try to sort of piece it all together. I think the only part that was comforting is that our plan, I felt like we executed a really good plan sort of 7 to 10 days pre-Brier. That part was really solid. And we felt like we had done the work. We had sort of ticked all the boxes off. We had had a good plan. Worked with Pat Simmons, worked with Brent. And so all those things were aligned. It was just kind of go play. So I think our work and the time and the commitment that we put in did lead to some comfort. But, yeah, knowing and believing that you're going to be there right at the end, I felt that that wasn't the same feeling as the hard work that you put into it. That was more, okay, I need to, you know, play at a high level for 10 days, something that personally I've never done for that length of time. I've done it in stretches, won Grand Slams, made Olympic trial final. You know, I've done it in pieces, but never 10 days. So that part, even though the belief was there, was still daunting.
The Regina crowd was very supportive of your team all week, Mike, but was there a particular game or moment during the week where the crowd lifted you up in a moment of adversity during the grind that Briar Week can be?
Yeah, and you mentioned it was a grind. I mean, it wasn't... I wanted to win this for like a very large number of reasons, you know, for myself being probably one of the last ones. So I actually found that from opening night, the crowd was, I expected it to be good, but just the level of enthusiasm that we felt for our team right away, that exceeded my expectations. I did not think that it was, you know, being a Manitoba player skipping their team, I just, you know, I didn't expect that to be such an amazing buy-in so early. And so what I found that crowd that some people might look at that as expectation and extra pressure, but I actually felt that it was uplifting, enriching right from opening night, So it actually wasn't something I expected to that level of intensity. So it was amazing. Like, I mean, honestly, it will go down as one of the very best curling memories of my entire career.
To be fair, Mike, you're at a point in your career where you've become a bit of a fan favorite, given that curling fans have seen you through the peaks and valleys of your career. Now, wearing Saskatchewan colors in Regina certainly led to more cheers for you, but you would have been one of the crowd favorites regardless of what colors you wore that week, I believe.
No, that's an interesting way of putting it. Sure. I mean, I suppose that, you know, the well-versed curling fan can probably see where I was at one point in my career and then sort of the dip and valley and then the rise back. So that might be kind of an interesting storyline that they could get behind.
As we've already discussed, Mike, Briar Week can be a grind. You had a string of three midweek games where the other team shook hands after eight ends. How important were those three games to give you just a little breather before the start of the championship round?
Obviously, there were some games that ended early. I think the challenge with those situations is maybe, you know, a little bit from a physical standpoint, especially if, you know, you're in a tight game doing lots of brushing, sweeping. But I think those moments do benefit you as far as mental fatigue. But there is the flip side where, you know, in a game that's not closer, there can be some complacency that sets in. And I felt that we as a team as a whole did a reasonable job still trying to get things out of those games, especially mid to late ends in those matches. And when I say that, I mean, you know, still learning the ice. Maybe on that specific sheet, there might be some tendencies that will remain there for the playoffs. You know, really honing in on rocks. Do I have a match set? You know, even because you're playing such a long tournament, there was definitely, you know, I can think of a game or two in particular. When we got a big lead on none of it, I was really honing in on my fundamentals at that point, just trying to make sure, especially long week, I haven't practiced a lot of games. You know, things can break down. You get a little bit loose. You're maybe not quite as technically sound as you were at the beginning of the week. It's just that's something that can happen. So I know there's some throws after we got up where that was my only focus, is throw the, you know, really look at my setup, my fundamentals, throw the rock as soundly as I possibly could. So trying to just get the maximum amount out of what is a situation where you might, you know, kind of go half asleep. And I don't mean that with any disrespect to those teams, but that's kind of what the scoreboard was. And, you know, we're just trying at that point, if the game is a little bit running away, to get the most out of it so that it serves us well in a playoff game when, you know, it's going the distance.
We heard from a few players at the bar, Mike, that the ice was good all week, but that the surface changed a few times throughout the week. Did you experience any of that at all? Did you, I'm assuming you felt it the same way that the other teams did, that there were some changes throughout the week with the ice surface, even though it was still a good surface throughout the whole bar?
Yeah, and I think the way you phrased it is that there was four different ice surfaces throughout the week. There was definitely opening weekend. It, you know, very fast, great surface, to be honest, but fast and not as much curl, a little straighter for sure, more than, you know, the players would have liked to have seen. And then Sunday night, they scratched. And then Monday was the wild day where there was a lot of upsets, teams trying to figure out the surface again and just how much curl are on these rocks. So I think that kind of went on figuring out the conditions for Monday, Tuesday. And then things sort of tempered and teams really got comfortable. I felt right through from sort of Wednesday to the semi. And I think the fourth set of conditions that we experienced were in the final. And normally I would have said playing the semi was, as long as you win the semi, is actually a pretty good advantage heading into the final. But for whatever reason, you know, sold out building, I think it was one of the worst days of the entire events, the Sunday championship day. So that final, what were conditions that we hadn't really seen before with frost again and speed zones, you know, things that I felt that Brad did a little bit better job than I did handling those changes, those sort of things that can happen in a final. He seemed just to kind of pounce on those differences a little bit better than I did. And I think, you know, it wasn't that I was surprised it was different from the semi to the final, but I was definitely, I would say, caught off guard a little bit, especially in the first few ends, just how different it was. And it's just wild within 3 hours how much had changed.
Your team had to take the quote-unquote scenic route in the playoffs, Mike, after losing your qualifier for the 1-2 game against Team Botcher. In the game, some thought you could have just as easily won. How did your team process that loss, given that it forced you to play a couple of extra elimination games, which is not something you want to do in an event like the Brier?
Yeah, it was a barn burner of a game. Like, both teams were playing well, trading back and forth. You know, it's essentially a game where we just kind of made some mistakes in one end, in the eighth end, and that really turned it. But honestly, probably the time crunch helped us. We didn't have much time to think about it. We had to race out of the building, you know, battle traffic, et cetera, get back to the hotel food court, just have enough time to eat, and then almost into a team meeting for the next game. I think might have had 10 minutes on my own at that point to just sort of try to shut things down. But there just wasn't much time between that game and our night game. So we were maybe fortunate not to really dwell on it very much, because we had to play Jamie Cooey so quickly. And I guess maybe it was a good thing in hindsight. Yeah, I would have loved to have more time between playoff games, even between the semi and final. Felt tight. You know, again, I guess we can debate what the right timing is, but I think some of the players would agree that the time between playoff games was perhaps slightly tight. Maybe that's something they could consider opening up a little bit, because it's by the time you get out of the building, interviews, et cetera, I feel like it's unnecessarily tight. So yeah, it helped us park that loss against Botcher on Friday and get ready for Jamie really quickly, because we had no choice. But I think that's something that perhaps we should review with the format. Those playoff games, I think, are slightly compressed when maybe there's the leeway to have a little bit more opening time between the rounds, especially the Friday games and the Sunday semi and final.
As we discussed a little bit earlier, Mike, most players would say that they would rather play in the semifinal at the Brier or Scotties if they knew beforehand that they would win the game. In your case, however, as per what you were saying a little bit earlier, it certainly didn't serve you as well, given the changes in the ice conditions between the semifinals and the final.
I think so in this case. Normally that wouldn't be something in play, not to the extent that it was. This was just one of those circumstances where the weather outside was, you know, about the warmest that we'd seen. And with a big crowd coming in, a sold out crowd, it just it created conditions that unfortunately for us, we just hadn't seen all event. I'm not sure. It didn't look too bad Saturday night when Brad played the 1-1-2 game. But, certainly something that, you know, if you're relying on information as far as ice conditions and feel and brooming shots from the semi, you know, you got to throw that out the window going to the final, unfortunately. And it's something, you're battling with, really believing what you're seeing. And I you know, if there's any regret over the entire event, that would be the small regret that I have, is that it just early on in that game, the first 3 to 4 ends just didn't quite believe what I was seeing. That might go for our whole entire team, just in, as far as how we're throwing and approaching shots, that, it might've cost us a little bit. I think the scoreboard showed it, and unfortunately, it's hard to shake off what you had just done in the semi and the experience, and not, you're on the same piece of ice, you're using the same set of rocks, and then all of a sudden things are going dramatically different. You might have hits curling an extra foot more that weren't curling in that spot before, and it's really hard to shake that past experience from only 3 to 4 hours ago when you were actually playing on that sheet and adapting to the new conditions. So if there's one small regret, it's just that Brad was seemed more ready for that than we were.
Now, Team Gushue raced to a 5-1 lead in the championship final, Mike, but then you scored one and then stole two in the sixth to narrow the gap to 5-4. Did you feel that you might have Team Gushue on the ropes a little bit at that point?
Yeah, it was a measurement for three. I think Brad would be the first one to say he got a little bit fortunate to get that one out,
yeah,
just by millimeters. We were almost looking at a tie game going into seven, and actually we had a really great end set up, and Brad made an incredible shot in his first one. Otherwise, he could be looking at a steal one or two again in seventh end. He made an incredible shot, and we did our best. We were going for the steal, and it just we kind of got caught in the middle. Whether my rock sits a little higher, ideally curls more. And it's just that track in the middle was really biting hard. There's, some frost really slow in the middle. And, I can't fault my guys. They're trying to place it perfectly. And we're just, it's hard in those conditions when you're coming into the middle to really get a sense of where rock's going to stop. And unfortunately, it stopped in the worst possible spot ever to give Brad the double for two, which really stopped our momentum.
And finally, Mike, you've now played in a trials final and a Brier final with different teams and in different eras of your career, to be perfectly honest. Which one bothered you the most 24 hours after it was over?
Maybe this one bugs me because it's fresh. Honestly, from what I remember in the trials final, I personally played to the best of my abilities, 90-some percent. Didn't really miss much. The guys were great for me, and it came down to last shot. I had a great performance in the playoffs and the trials, and really walked away with that without feeling like there's something else I could have done. Played some of my best curling ever to that point in my career, especially in a big Curling Canada type situation. I think there was many who wondered whether I could play that calm and poised. And I did it. And I think some of that, even though it was quite some time 6 years ago, did help me this week. I knew I could be calm and poised in a Breyer final situation. So I knew I was ready as far as controlling the moment, you know, grabbing energy when I wanted to, or felt like it from the crowd. I let myself go, and I think it was probably apparent to many viewers that, you know, I showed a full range of emotions. I could be calm, poised, and downright celebratory after a big shot. So, but it felt good. Like I had that full range going, and I knew what I needed to do to bring myself into the right kind of mindset to go after the next shot or the next end. I don't know. This one tingles a little bit more in that it felt like really destiny was aligning. And, you know, that one small regret, just not adapting to the ice conditions quite as well as our opponent. And it's fresh. There's not a lot to really be down about. Like we put an amazing 10-day event together, and it, you know, like I said, it started 7-10, even longer before that. So there's nothing to be ashamed of. I guess just because it's pressure, it's just, you know, it hits you harder, makes you kind of feel empty at the moment.
No, and you certainly didn't shy away from showing emotion on the ice in Regina, Mike, which is something that we don't see very many curlers do at the elite level anymore.
It feels really good to be genuine out there, whether it's, you know, a high level emotion or not. Like, I think what you saw from our team was, you know, they're a special set of guys, and everything you see is pretty real. And it feels great to be able to do that with these guys. And also knowing that if I go there at an emotional level, I am going to bring myself back to perform. Like I'm not going to hurt the guys, and they know that, and vice versa. Right. So it's just, I think it's being really self-aware of what's good for you, and also the team knowing that, you know, all that kind of stuff is genuine, and us really accepting one another. So it's, yeah, it was kind of a really special 10 days to be immersed in all the energy and everything that was flowing through us, and not really, you know, fighting urges or anything like that, just being accepting of what was flowing through us.
My next guest this week is EJ Harnden, who won his third career Breyer title in Regina, including his second consecutive since joining Team Gushue at the start of this Olympic cycle. EJ, we are speaking a few days after you won your second consecutive Breyer and third of your career. Tell me how it feels to have won another Breyer.
Yeah, it felt pretty amazing. Anytime you get to step on top of the podium and get your hands on that tankard trophy is extremely special. So you definitely don't get tired of it, that's for sure.
We'll move on to Breyer Week in a few moments here, EJ, but I want to take you back to last season for a moment. You and I chatted last season at some point, and you were still struggling at that time with your revamped release the changes that you had made to your release after joining Team Gushue. How has that progressed this season? Because it certainly looked like you were a little bit more comfortable on the ice throughout the season, specifically in Regina at the Breyer.
Yeah, definitely got, it's getting better. Quite honestly, it wasn't until the Breyer where I felt sort of like myself again in terms of having the confidence that I would normally have when playing and even in practice. And so it kind of just really started to come together and kind of complete itself probably a week or two before the Breyer. Like this season, it was, you know, trending in the right direction, but still some, you know, some times of being a little uncertain and not having the, you know, the confidence or the consistency that I would like to have, but it really all kind of clicked and came together in the Breyer, and that's I think evident in my play for the most part throughout the entire event, which was, you know, it was great. I have to say, you know, I'm pretty hard on myself at times and like to kind of be as perfect as possible, but I was pretty proud of myself for how I was able to perform and get myself to where I am now, knowing how hard it's been to sort of get here again.
I interviewed Brad right before the Breyer, EJ, and he summarized your team's season, and this was his word, not mine, by calling it blah. What type of headspace was the team in when you arrived in Regina for the Brier? Because it certainly seems from an outsider's perspective that Team Gushue, in fact, hadn't had the type of typical Team Gushue season heading into the Brier.
I think we were in a pretty good space, like headspace, that is, and feeling confident that I think, for the most part, there hasn't been too many teams this year for whatever reason that have really kind of stood out and had, a big run of wins or that sort of thing. Botchers seems to have had a pretty strong season, maybe a few others. And so for us, I think it was just, really focusing in on the good things the things that we were doing well, and having some good constructive conversation around some of those other things and making sure that, we weren't, sort of skimming past them. We were having, again, good, honest conversations. And I think the Brier for all of us now, being a little bit, in the later years of our career, brings out the best in us. I don't think there was any, any sort of doubt or, we were, unsure or uncertainty in terms of how we were going to perform. I think all of us get up for the Brier very easily. And I think we did just that. So I think it was, and even while we were in the Brier, it was, again, if we had a bad game, it was acknowledging some of the things that we would want to improve, and as well as some of the things that we did well, and putting that behind us, focusing in on the things that we can control and not trying to hold on to the past and this sort of imagery and expectation of perfection, because it's can be a lonely place to live if that's where you want to live. And I think we did a good job of not, not trying to be too hard on ourselves and just, again, really focusing in on the things that we can control and knowing the potential of ourselves as individuals as well as a team.
So, EJ, you beat a pretty familiar face in the 1-2 qualifying game in Regina. How strange was it to play against your former skipper, your cousin, Brad Jacobs, in the playoffs at a Brier?
Yeah, definitely, obviously a little bit different playing against Brad Jacobs versus playing with him. Didn't have that opportunity last year in the same way that I did with Ryan in the playoffs, being in the 1-2 game and then again in the final. So meeting Brad in the playoff round was, it was a little different. But I think this year we had played each other enough where you kind of started to get a feel for it, versus with Ryan last year. I really didn't play him in any sort of meaningful game up until those games at the Brier. So that was a little different. So it was fun. Brad and myself and Ryan, we were all cheering for one another and want the best for one another. So if I'm not going to win, I'd love to see one of those two guys win and vice versa. So yeah, it was good. It was, I think last year prepared me well for those sort of games moving into this year, into the second season.
As we all know, EJ, the Team Gushue fan base travels well. That said, you were definitely not the crowd favorites in the final in Regina. Did that remind you a little bit of your Team Jacobs days?
Yeah, maybe. But I think for me, I laughed. I said, I'm used to this. Like, this is, I've been on this side a lot when, playing with Team Jacobs and say playing against Team Gushue and in some big games and not being the crowd favorite. So I kind of chuckled. I'm like, this is a little more familiar for me. I'd rather be on the side where the fans are right behind you. I love that. That's a special treat. But it's a little bit more comforting for me to be on the other side of it as well. So I got a good chuckle out of that. I think it's amazing. It doesn't matter whether the crowd's cheering for you, not so much against you, but really cheering, strong for the other team and just being loud and energetic. I think that's all you want as a player, whether, again, it's for you or for someone else, is that, that really lively atmosphere. I remember in the introductions, when they introduced Team Saskatchewan and we were standing there on the ice and the crowd absolutely erupted and was almost like deafening in there. I kind of tapped Mark on the shoulder and I looked at him. I said, this is awesome. Like, I know they weren't cheering for us and we had some good support, but just you know, the atmosphere was pretty cool. So I think as an athlete, you thrive off of that, and you can use it in any way that you want. For me, I love that. I just love the energy, the excitement. And so whether it's for you, you utilize it for you and gain some momentum and some motivation there. And if it's not, then you use it on the other side to try to keep it as quiet as possible for as long as possible and use it whatever way, you know, suits you. So I thought that was great. The crowd was amazing. Like I said, loud, energetic, cheering for all sorts of different shots, you know, and some major eruptions when Mike and the boys made some good ones. It was a really cool atmosphere.
So, EJ, you trended on curling Twitter the opening weekend of the Brier when you came to the defense of your skipper in one of the early games when some of the fans were getting a little disruptive. Can you walk me through that situation?
Yeah, sure. It was probably good they didn't capture the first few things I had said, so I was happy about that. It had been going on for too long. It was multiple ends. It was on an end sheet. The person was standing basically like hanging over the boards and it was happening while all of us were shooting, not before, not after, but during and progressively getting louder. I have no problem with people, you know, being expressive out there and being vocal and getting into the game. I just don't think there's a place for it where when people are trying to shoot, similar to kind of golf or tennis, you know, there's a lot of silence over and above that. So it's, you hear everything, especially during your delivery. Outside of that, it's fair game. It's all good. But, you know, it was a big shot coming up where, you know, if we make it, we gain a lot of momentum and kind of start to solidify or at least break open the game a little bit. And I heard him starting to go as Brad was getting ready. And so I just had enough and turned to him and had a few words that I exchanged with him. And then I guess you would have heard the rest thereafter. So I didn't think it was something that we should continue to tolerate. And so I kind of shared my opinion on that.
EJ, I've had a lot of players tell me in the past that they would rather play the semifinal at a Brier or Scotties if they knew they would win that game ahead of time. However, I spoke to Mike McCune earlier today, and he told me that the ice conditions had changed a lot between the afternoon draw with the semifinal and the final later that evening when they played your team. He said they found it difficult to believe what he was seeing for the first few ends, which led to some missed line calls. How quickly did your team realize that the ice conditions on Sunday evening for the championship final was different than the ice surface that you may have seen earlier in the week?
Yeah, honestly, for me, it was the first practice slide. In practice, just as soon as my slider sort of touched the ice and I slid out for practice, I could tell it was a different surface. You could see the frost. You couldn't see any frost throughout the week. And then the surface itself just felt flatter on underneath the foot, underneath the slider. So you knew right away it was going to be different. But what degree, we weren't sure there yet. I would definitely say we adapted well, but there was definitely times where I don't, you know, we struggled with it. And I think, you know, I think it was kind of equal, right, for both teams, because I know for me, like, the ice, it was amazing all week. Greg did a phenomenal job. And even in the final, it was good too. It was just different. But because it was so consistent and Greg did such a great job with the ice all week, whether you know, you just knew what draw weight was from game to game. So you just had to think back and say, okay, you know, I know what, you know, T-line weight feels like. I know what, you know, top 12 feels like. I know what hack weight feels like. And so then you take that into the final and it was vastly different, right? It was slower. It was curling more. It was patchier. Whereas before, all lines, all paths were pretty much identical. It was quicker. It was curling, but it wouldn't sort of grab as much as it was in the final. So you definitely saw, I think, both teams struggle with that. Maybe to the point you made, maybe our team did adapt a little bit quicker, but again, this is just, those are the things that I think you almost have to plan for in the final, especially when, you know, it's going to be a packed house. You know, the weather had started to get a little bit more milder each day. And again, I give credit to Greg and his crew. I'm sure, and I know they did everything they could. It's at that point hard to probably control the environment as much as you'd love to. And I think, you know, for us, we were able to figure out those key shots probably a little bit sooner, and especially some of the draws I would say that Brad made even early in the game, as well as Mark made even the end, which was you know, a one of probably end of, we'd like to forget as much as possible in the sixth end. Mark made a phenomenal draw on his, I forget if it was his second. Yeah, it was his second. And that ended up being third shot, and we gave up the steal of two. But yeah, if we didn't adapt in some of those situations the way we did, it could have been very different.
And finally, EJ, your team has a little bit of unfinished business at the World Championships. How pumped are you about heading to Switzerland for another crack at a World Championship title?
Yeah, super excited. Obviously, again, anytime you represent your country, it's an honor and something to be very grateful for. For myself, this is, you know, I'm joked, but not really. You know, half joking when I say that, maybe a little chuckle after, but I've never, it's one of the ones I've never won. Been really fortunate, obviously, to achieve some pretty cool things in my career and being part of, obviously, some great teams. But along that path and along that journey, I've never won the World Championships. The previous two times, coming home with silver. So I would love to win gold, for our, obviously, for myself, more importantly for our country. Never played a World Championships outside of Canada. So that's going to be a little bit interesting and different. And again, want to experience and enjoy the journey and what will come with it being, you know, in a different country, with a maple leaf on our back and representing it as well as we can, which I know we'll give ourselves a good opportunity to stand on top of that podium, and hoping we can do that.
And that does it for this week's episode. A huge thank you to Mike and EJ for joining me this week. Also, don't forget to check out our friends and partners in the Curling Podcast Network, the Two Girls in the Game Podcast, the Rock Logic Podcast, and the Curling Legends Podcast. I'm Frank Rock, and you're listening to the From the Hack Curling Podcast, part of the Curling News and Sports Illustrated Partnership.